before we start this week's show, just a quick note that this was recorded before the second presidential debate. Sorry for not getting it out until after the presidential debate, so the whole conversation about that stuff sounds completely and totally outdated because events have transpired. I apologize. You know, we do this as a hobby. Life gets in the way of doing these things quickly sometimes. Sorry. Anyway, here's the Curmudgeon's Corner from before the second presidential debate. The next Curmudgeon's Corner, we will, of course, talk about what happened at the second presidential debate and the aftermath thereof. In the meantime, here's your episode.
Hell, there we go. Jeez.
I kept. Hello, Yvonne.
Hey, I have Skypey set, so if we don't answer a call on the computer, it will go to the house. Okay, all right. But that's not what I was trying to do. I kept trying to hit the answer button, and I got a spinning wheel, and I couldn't get the damn thing to frickin'. Anyway.
So anyway, welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner, guys.
Hi. How are ya?
It is Sunday, October 14th, 2012. I'm Sam Minter, and Yvonne Beau is here now that he's got his connection problems worked out.
Yes.
And, you know, and I thought he was still asleep, but just as we started, who opens my office door and climbs onto my back?
Alex!
Alex is here.
Hey!
Here, I'll make it so he can hear you.
Hey, Alex! Good morning.
Anyway, so well, you know, we didn't even discuss topics again last night or to this morning or whatever the hell it is. You know, I've had less than 2 hours sleep, so I'm just like whatever.
2 hours? Why?
I stayed up doing something. It wasn't like anything like crazy was going on. I just like I got started on a project at like midnight and I just kept going. So. Entirely my fault. Anyway, okay. We figure, you know, look, we got the vice presidential debate, which Yvonne skipped. We've got the general situation on the presidential race.
Very little.
And then we'll see where things are from there.
I have not been really watching these debates. I got to be honest with you. Okay.
You, because Yvonne is lame. He tries to be a pundit, but he doesn't even watch the damn things.
Oh, you see, here's the point of this, okay? I think that my opinion of what happens in the debate when I watch it or not in it or whatever is irrelevant, okay? Because the reality is that what's more important is the reaction to the debate, not the actual debate.
Well, you know, you probably are correct on that, because for the vast majority of people out there, well, I don't know what the numbers are. There are actually quite a few people watched that first debate. It had really high ratings.
Yeah.
But like, there are quite a few people who do not watch.
Right.
And in fact, the sort of low-information voters who are likely to be changing their minds and such are likely not to be the ones who are watching debates anyway. The right. people who are going to be watching debates are the guys who follow politics, are interested in politics, and guess what? Those people have made up their mind.
Exactly. I mean, and that's why I'm like, I'm sorry, but, and let's face it, the debate, okay, listen, for me to skewer Romney or Ryan or even Biden and Obama, say the shit that I already know they're fucking selling, for God's sakes, okay, again, for an hour and a half, unless there is some highlight moment, you know, that I want to watch in a replay, it's pointless.
You know, okay. I still think, though, you know, if you're going to try to be a fake political pundit, you know, it's malpractice, not
a lot. I think it's bullshit. I think that my gauge of this is correct. I mean, it's horrible. I'll tell you that how people sell it is more important than actually the freaking debate itself.
You know, I agree it's probably more important, but you got to pay attention to both. Oh, we got the alphabet going here. Well,
first of all, they had the Steelers game right at the same time as the vice presidential debate, and I chose the Steelers game. I did watch some parts of the debate, but not very much. But I probably should have watched a fucking debate because the Steelers managed to lose a fucking...
we have mommy here to take you, Alex. You gonna head off to get some breakfast with mommy? I'll be down after. I know. Anyway, look.
Anyway, but let's go to what happened.
Well, okay, first, let me give my every week
update.
My update. On the disaster that has become the Obama campaign. Mm. So, you know, basically, last week we talked, there were just a couple polls that had come out since the first presidential debate, and right. It was already looking pretty bad, but you made the point, hey, there are only a couple polls so far, and I was like, yeah, I guess there are only a couple polls, but the ones we've got look really bad. Right. And for the next week, they all looked really bad.
That's
every
right.
single poll that came out was bad for Obama, good for Romney.
That's right.
And, you know, if you look at, you know, my categorization and, you know, go to election2012.ibalsamay.com for more up-to-date information because it'll probably be a while after, blah, 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 yeah, you know, et cetera. But, you know, bottom line, look, it slipped to the point where the current status, if everybody won the states they're ahead in, Obama is still ahead, but it's now 281 to 257. Which
right.
is incredibly close. Incredibly close. We're talking
I might point out, though,
we're
that
talking
that's
about,
still...
Listen. I mean,
but
wait,
but that's still a wider margin than the 2004 election, by the way, at this
point.
Well,
yes, 2004 was an incredibly close election.
Right.
But the whole thing here is that, you know, up until... You know,
yeah, it was a slam dunk.
It, 2 weeks ago, we were talking about how it was a slam dunk, and unless Obama screwed something up majorly, he was walking away with it.
And then he did.
And yeah, then he screwed up something majorly. But like the point on the 281 to 257, you know, not only Obama is still ahead there, but like for most of the year, whenever I've said, you know. Yeah, Romney's best case is to win, but he's behind. You know, it's required, like, in order to win, he would have had to do an incredible feat of sweeping a whole lot of states he was behind in.
Right.
At this point, in order to, you know, win, he has to get the states he's ahead in, and then all he has to do is bring one additional state on board. That one state would be Ohio, and that one state he's behind by only a couple percent. Less than a couple percent, depending on, you know, how you look at it. It's like 1.something% in my 5-poll average at the moment, and lots of polls have him actually ahead. You know, so and Romney's best case is almost symmetrical with Obama's best case at this point. Obama's best case is 347 electoral votes. Romney's best case is 337 electoral votes. That's pretty close. This is a, you know, we're at the current state of the race is no longer. Bye, Alex. I know. I'll talk to you later. You were being pretty good, but you were still talking quite a bit. I'll see you soon. You have a good breakfast. Okay, but the anyway, it's close now. There's no way to say it's not close. It's symmetrical. Like if you look between the best case and the worst case for each candidate, it's pretty even right now. Now
I will say this. Look, the key to this thing really is Ohio. Okay. That's what I mean, and
Ohio's been the tipping point
assessment a while ago. We were trying to examine like what Mitt Romney's best chances were, okay? And I did a map where I gave him Florida and I gave him a couple of major states and whatever. It still really came down to Ohio. That's the reality.
And FHQs and a whole bunch of other folks who rank all the states by how, you know, likely levels of support. Ohio and Virginia are the ones that have always come up in the middle, and usually Ohio. And so that's always been the potential tipping point. Like, For Romney to win, he's always had to bring all the states up to and including Ohio onto his side of the fence. The difference is 2 weeks ago, that was a really, really tall order. Now, it's like easily within grasp. That's the difference here.
Well, I'm not sure about easily within grasp.
Right?
I mean,
let me state exactly what I mean right now. Easily within grasp, meaning given what the polling is showing, if the election was held today, which of course it is not, that Romney would have a pretty damn good chance. Now, the people who do statistics on it rather than just the ends like I do are saying what does pretty good chance mean? It means about
60-40.
About a 60-40 split with Obama 60%, Romney 40%.
Which is a pretty good shot.
Obama's still the favorite, but just barely now.
Right.
Because 40% is a damn decent chance. Whereas whenever you looked at things percentage wise prior to
It was a freaking like slaughter. It was like 80-20 Obama.
90% chance Obama.
Right.
And some people's calculations had it even much higher than that, up at 99% plus Obama. But the key was the people who had it at 99% plus were always if the election was held today, whereas the people who were at like 70-80% were taking into account the chances of things changing between now and the election. And if I look structurally at it, you know, you still see this is right now Romney is at the highest he has been the entire election. He's in the best.
The question is,
he's in the best position.
Okay, which I've been thinking about this week.
So
if the question is,
if there's any reversal,
you know, is this,
so
wait, I mean, let's
let,
say,
let
is
me
this
make
a
my
bump?
Blah, 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 let me make
that
my point, Yvonne.
Fade after
let
the
me
next
make
debate.
My point. Basically, if he's at the highest he's been all year, if there's any reversion to the mean at all, if this turns out to be, rather than being a permanent change in the state of the race, if this is just a bump from the first debate and then it starts coming back towards Obama, then it's still going to be relatively easy for Obama. And that all ties down again. We never had to say this before. He was so far ahead. But now it's all, you know, what does the man do in the next couple weeks?
Well, I think that one thing's for sure is that he's got to, you know, have a totally different tactic in this next debate.
Yep.
I mean, that's the key.
Before we jump there, let's talk for a second.
Definitely.
Actually, let's take a break, divide this up, and we'll be back, and we will talk about the VP debate a little bit, what Yvonne's read about it, and my impressions from actually watching it, and how it might affect
I watched
things.
A few clips.
Yeah, clips my ass. Okay, we'll be right back after this exciting message.
You're in the Valley, AM 1620, and LiganAirRadio.com. This is where you'll find your favorite songs. Everybody's doing a brand new dance now.
Come on, baby. Let's do the twist.
Well, they got a new dance, and it goes like this.
I hit the radio dial and tuned it up all the way.
I got a dance.
Dancing in the moonlight.
Classic music for a classic American town. AM 1620. And in stereo at LiganAirRadio.com, the Valley.
Okay, here we are, and I'm once again on headphones. Wait, So, the vice presidential debate. Look, the bottom line. If anybody out there didn't watch it, like Yvonne didn't watch it because they wanted to watch the game or do something else, is you know. Biden did what everybody said he needed to do, that everybody said they wanted Obama to do a week earlier, which is every time Ryan said practically anything, you know, Biden is like, oh, come on, really? You know, that's not right. Here, what about this? And calling him on practically everything that came out of his mouth, putting him on the spot for several things. There was... The format of the debate was much more Whether or not it was supposed to be, it was much more back and forth. Biden was interrupting all the time. Ryan was interrupting him back. Yeah, they went back and forth. It was actually a fairly substance-filled debate. As usual, I was looking for mostly style in a debate rather than substance. But both guys were actually talking substance. Both guys were actually critically engaged. Both guys, when the other person said something they disagreed in, made that damn clear. Both guys pointed out problems with what the other person was saying. And basically this was the exciting debate that the first one was not. The first one, you know, was everybody's 100% unanimous reaction, almost, was, you know, Romney was engaged and doing everything, and Obama practically looked like he was asleep and didn't want to be there.
Obama looked like he was just playing like duck and chive. He was just like, you know, he was just like sitting there with his punches like pulled and just trying to see how he could like stand there for an hour and a half without throwing a punch. This were a boxing match,
something literally. Like that. So, and that was definitely not the case in this vice presidential debate. My immediate take afterwards was, yes, that was a very solid performance by Biden. By the people, the Democrats were going to eat it up and love it and think that, you know, he did wonderfully and that he won. But the people on the right would think their guy won too.
Right.
And yep. The people in the middle would not have their minds changed. There might be a very slight Biden advantage, but we're talking very slight. And that for the most part, you know, this is everybody's going to go back to their corners thinking their guy won, you know, and which is what, you know, normally happens in a debate, is that, you know, everybody does their thing and it doesn't change anything.
Right.
And I think that's what you got here. The one thing is it does give, like, you know, we had a week where a lot of your diehard Democrats were like
ready to kill themselves.
Yeah, practically, you know, and you know, maybe this, you know, boosts their morale a bit, which is important in this kind of thing. But, you know, I actually saw a number of people commenting on, you know, how this was like, well, I'm thinking of one particular comment. One person on Facebook that I used to go to high school with, you know, who has made posts over the course of the last couple months, basically indicating they feel like they're still undecided and they're not really particularly happy with either of these guys.
Mm-hmm.
And a few minutes into the debate, they posted something along the lines of, "Oh my God, this is just politics as usual. I had to turn it off." So, and I wouldn't be surprised if that was
a common reaction.
Yeah.
Mm, yeah, I could see that. Yeah. So brings it to the point that, I mean, this debate, all it did was, I think, I mean, in real terms was a draw. Okay.
I think so. And I think in terms of the polling that you'll start seeing soon, like, it's too early to have polls that include the vice presidential debate. I think there have been a couple that partially included it that have been released so far. But I think what you're hoping for this time, what the Democrats are hoping for is not particularly that they'll see everything pop back to where it was, but at least they want to see the bleeding stop.
Right.
Because all week, every single poll that was released was worse for Obama. It just got worse and worse and worse. Now, the reality of that is probably that it was an immediate spike downward, as opposed to it got worse every day of last
week.
Right,
it's just that the polls, it just takes a while, you know, there weren't enough polls, and they were just reading the reaction.
It takes a while for the
polls. Which is the reason why I keep wondering whether, you know, well, okay, I'm going to take the word wondering. Okay, I think, I mean, my personal opinion is that Romney did get a major bounce from it, just like Obama got a major bounce from the convention. Okay, I think it truly is a bounce that somehow will smooth out as time goes along.
I think it is actually probably most likely that it was a bounce as opposed to a permanent change. However, we just don't have the info yet.
That's my gut reaction. I'm not saying that I'm 100% right on this. I could be wrong, but I do think it was a bounce.
Because
I really don't think that many people changed their mind that quickly.
There were a lot of people doing analysis initially. The people who were looking very carefully at the polls that came out, exactly the dates they were covered, blah, 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 who initially said that last week it looked like there was a really big bounce in Romney's direction Thursday and Friday, but that it had started to actually recede by Saturday and Sunday. Mm-hmm. A lot of these people were saying, look, it looks like he had a really big spike, but it only lasted a couple days. But then the polls from Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday came in, and they were emphasized, and those polls were lending themselves to the idea that, hey, you know, maybe it is a bump, but if it is, it's lasting a while. That the effect that looked like it was receding a little bit on Saturday and Sunday of last week went away. So it looks like at this point, it looked like there was a big bump towards Romney. One of the biggest results we've ever seen from a debate in polls.
Yeah, agreed.
You know, like, and we talked a little bit about this last week. Like, normally, you know, even the biggest effects that we've ever seen before were like 3%. And this looked bigger than that.
Yep.
So it looks like one of the biggest ever. And it was sticking around a little while. At least most of a week. The convention bounces, for instance, usually last 2.5-3 weeks.
Right.
So, you know, if this lasts two and a half, 3 weeks, we'll be talking about it for a while yet.
Right.
And that'll take us practically up to the election.
That's
right. And there's the thing, you know, we've got so little time left that, you know.
It's making it for a nail biter, baby.
Which is interesting. I mean, you know, we still, like I said, yeah, we still haven't seen Romney actually pull ahead. He's still a little bit behind. It's just damn close.
Right.
And we'll see what happens to the polls in the next week or two and what happens with these next couple of debates. Anything more to say about the Veeps, given that you didn't watch it?
I mean,
I'll say something. But Biden made a lot of faces. He was, every time Ryan was talking, he was sort of, it's like he'd practiced his over exaggerated, oh, you've got to be fucking kidding me face. You know, and he was using it continuously.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean,
I said at the time, I thought he was overdoing that a little bit, in that, you know, his base would eat that stuff up, but, you know, the undecideds would be like, you know, come on, guy, you know, but.
Well, but we'll see. I mean, we still, you know, we got how many days to go?
Not many. I don't know. I don't have the count in front of me, but not many.
Well, so we'll see. I mean, I don't know. I mean, the whole thing. One of the things that I saw the reaction from a lot of the people that were using about the debate was, but it was just about the style, I guess, and people, you know. But in the end, even the whole debate about the style, like we mentioned, I think that the key in the end was that it played to both their bases. It was something that both sides that watched the debate could say, my guy did well, but didn't change much really in terms of the debate. I mean, at a campaign.
Yep. I think so. Absolutely. The only question is whether Obama's bleeding has stopped.
Right.
Have we bottomed out
for a few more days?
If we've bottomed out now, and Romney doesn't make any further gains, then guess what?
They managed to survive this clusterfuck.
Yeah, it basically says something to how far ahead he was to start with, that he could go through this and still be ahead, even if it's slightly ahead.
Yeah.
But he can't afford any more fuck-ups.
They can't afford any more fuck-ups. That's for damn sure. That's for damn fucking sure.
Yeah. Okay, let's take a break, and then we'll figure out what else we have to talk about.
Breaky, well, breaky.
We'll be back after this.
This is a break. Oh, yes, this is a break. This is a break, because no one gave me any suggestions. I told you. I warned you. So this is a break. This is a wonderful break. A wonderful break. Yes, indeed, this is a break. This is a break in the middle of Curmudgeon's Corner. Yes, this is a break. Yes, this is a break, 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 yes, this is a break, yes, this is a break, 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 yes, it is a break, and now the break is over.
And we're back, and like right before the end of that last segment, Alex joined me again, and so far, he's quiet because he has a popsicle.
Oh. Wow.
You know, popsicles can do amazing things. So, Yvonne, what else is there to talk about?
Steve Wozniak went to some fucking place. I don't know if you saw him and started, like, talking like some kind of an idiot that the iPhone 5 is still too small or something.
I have not seen this at all.
You didn't see that? But here's a funny thing. On the other end, I don't know if you saw that Samsung is going to launch a version of the S3 that's actually smaller.
I think I did see that, a mini version of it or whatever.
Yes. Okay. Now, one thing I saw about the mini version is that, I got to be honest with you, I looked at the specs. It really quite sucks. Okay. I mean, the screen resolution is like 25% worse than on any of the, you know, than an iPhone 4S. And I'm like looking at it, I'm like, really? I mean, you're going to launch, instead of like launching a smaller phone with like, cool, you know, with like pretty decent performance, you're really going to launch a shitty version of your flagship phone, which I don't know if that's such a hot idea, to be honest with you.
So, I mean, we'll see what happens with the iPad mini, because you could give some of the same arguments there, because like it's going to be smaller, but all the rumors have that the specs aren't going to be anywhere near as good as the big one. So if that's true, it's kind of also a shitty version.
Then it's
got to
be a price play. I mean, that's the only thing I can think of. I mean, and I don't know. I mean, if on the other end, well, Samsung has made that play successfully in terms of having quite a lot of phones at cheaper price points. That's really cheaper price points outside of the United States, because in the U.S., because our phones are so heavily subsidized, there is no impact on the pricing in terms of, I mean, you can get an iPhone 4 or 4S for free. Let's face it, okay, or close to it.
4
okay?
for free, 4S for $99.
Exactly.
And a 5 for $199.
In other countries, it's substantially more expensive because they don't provide that big a subsidy on the phone, okay? So the question is, you know, it's just, I mean, that device, the Mini, I guess, is meant that there's quite a lot of smaller iPad rivals right now out there that are catching a good amount of market share on the tablet market.
And Apple wants to get in that game.
You talk about the Nook, the Kindle Fire, the Samsung Mini tablet shit thing, but all these others, okay, that are at a cheaper price point. I mean, if Apple introduces something that addresses that price point, I mean, I think it's an important area for them to cover. Whereas, I mean, the competitors at the price point of the iPad, really, all of them are really doing like shit for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, I guess, is the play, which I think is a smart play. I mean, you want to try to cover all the different
and
price
look,
points.
You know, we made fun last week of like the people with the really big phones, but you know, there's some people who like them.
I understand that. I see these people, but I'm like, I mean, I just still think it's stupid. I mean, I'm sorry. I guess that, you know, Wozniak right now, what does he weigh? Jesus, I saw him on the picture. He looks like he's weighing close to 400 pounds. I mean, I guess, you know, look.
He can afford some good food.
He needs a phone that big, because otherwise he won't be able to find it inside all that lard. I mean, I don't know.
Now, behave, Yvonne.
Well, I got to tell you a true story. I got this from a friend of mine at the office, okay? This is a very true story, okay?
Are we going to have to edit this out again, Yvonne?
Okay.
Are we going to have to edit this out?
Years ago. A long time ago.
Oh, okay.
We were sitting at this conference room, okay? And he's pretty portly, okay? You know, weighs about, I'd say, close to 400 pounds. And he had a small phone. I think it was a Razr or something similar in size, okay? All right? So he's sitting there, and he used to put the phone on his. He had a belt clip, okay, with it, okay. So one day we're sitting in a meeting, and all of a sudden I hear this muffled, and we're like, "What the hell?" So he's all of a sudden I see him jamming it around his stomach, and I'm like, "Oh shit, yeah, I'm way too fat. This damn thing, I can't find it inside my belly." And I was like, we all just busted out laughing, okay? It was like a long time ago, but yeah, it's one of those tiny phones, so he couldn't find it. So I would guess. He probably couldn't find the.
You know, I think the real reason, and the reason that people like these big phones, is they actually want to do more capability on that phone. They want something closer to a tablet experience. They still want to be able to shove it.
You know what I realized the other day? I have LogMeIn connected to my home computer. Okay, all right, so I can do stuff on it. Occasionally, I got to look for something. I could do it on the fucking screen on my iPhone. And yeah, to be honest with you, unless I am trying to do heavy duty work, usually what I'm doing is I'm searching for a file or something or whatever I wanted to grab.
You can do it. You can do these things on a smaller screen, but there's no question with a bigger screen, especially if you're not just blowing up the pixels, but it's higher resolution and bigger.
It's higher resolution,
you know,
right.
Then there's no question bigger does make it easier. It is easier to do those kinds.
It's not comfortable in your pocket. Well, it's not like yesterday I went out on my Bermuda shorts and I went to a party. If I had a phone that big, I'm sitting down. It's fucking uncomfortable.
You don't even want a case on your phone. You are extremely sensitive to like the size of your phones.
Yeah, I know. I know. But you know what? People used to be that way. Okay, but I don't understand why people all of a sudden are becoming slightly desensitized to that fact.
I'll tell you why. Because they see the trade-off.
Women don't like these big phones. I've seen that these are very male-oriented phones. Okay? Because a woman and a big phone, a small purse, are you kidding? No.
Yeah, look, you're right. They're different type of people who want it. They're different type of people who are attracted to it. But they see a trade-off. They're willing to have something bigger in their pocket. I used to carry around a big ass scientific calculator in my pocket because I'm a fucking geek.
But well, that's true. You did, right?
But it was huge.
But I would be the type of person that would refuse to do something like that. I carried around
fairly substantially sized smartphones prior to the iPhone as well. These various Trio things. Well, I guess they weren't huge, but they were bigger than modern iPhones. Especially thickness.
Oh gosh, and I hated them, for God's sakes. I avoided them like the plague.
I never minded them size-wise in the slightest. That was never even a slight concern.
Okay, there's a good audience out there for a bigger phone, and I carry around a big-ass battery case,
and you know it doesn't bother me. Like,
but to here's you, like, the every, thing. Every, My like, point is matters. That wasn't the mass audience. My point is that I think some people are gravitating to it right now because they're saying it's sexy. But in really, once you get down to it, in a deviation to the mean, I mean.
That's the thing, though. This is the whole Android strategy. This is not about the mass audience. This is about they can create. There's hundreds and hundreds of different models with all kinds of different variations. They're big screens. They're small screens. They're touch screens. They're keyboards. They're ones that are a little bit wider. There are ones that are taller. There's ones that are thicker. There's ones that are thinner. There's all kinds of variations of Android with slightly different UIs. There's this and that and this and that. And that's the whole point of the Android ecosystem, it's not like Apple, where they try to do one size fits all. Instead, they go with all of these variations, and an individual can find the one that's right for them. So the person who really is size sensitive can get a really tiny one. The one who wants a really big screen can get a really big fucking screen.
My point is that this almost goes back to the reason why Motorola almost went fucking belly up. They did like 20 different – or Nokia. They did 20 or 30 fucking different variations on the same fucking piece of shit. Okay? I mean, really.
There's no question.
And you know what? None of them stood out. I mean, none of them do. I mean, you know, there are all these fucking Android phones out there that other than really than the Galaxy S3, which Samsung has really decided to like make, you know, like as a brand, because finally one maker realized, could you fucking name me an Android phone from any other fucking manufacturer that you really remember what the fuck it looks like? Exactly.
Well, you know, and I'll be honest, I don't pay a huge amount of attention to them.
But I guarantee you, you can grab the average person on the street and they couldn't fucking point one out either.
Yeah, there are the fanboys that certainly could. But like again,
I'm talking if you do a random, you grab like the next 30 people that cross you on the street. Okay, all right, you stand in the corner, see 30 people coming, you ask them a fucking question to mention you of a phone and identify it. That's not the Galaxy S3. I guarantee you that none of them would fucking
I think that's the point of the Android experience. They don't want the one standout Android phone. They want the people who go into their carrier and say, give me your phone.
From the Android point of view, if you're HTC, for example, who's sucking wind all of a sudden, it's really not a great business model. Because they make like about 30 fucking different phones. If I go to the HTC website right now, I'm sure that I'll see like about, I don't know, a stupidly long list of different phones. None of them which you're like, huh?
Yeah, but like I said, you are clearly not who they're going after.
That's for damn sure. The other day, somebody I know went and bought a new Android phone. Okay, all right. And they came to me and said, hey, plugged it in overnight. It doesn't work. Okay. Let me take a look. I said, well, let me take a look at this thing. Okay. So I grabbed the phone and I grab it, and it's some HTC phone, right? Android. Right. So I grab it, and I feel, wow, the phone feels very light. It feels lighter than my iPhone. I'm thinking, geez, you know, yeah, of course, what are the lightest phones out there? Right. What the hell is it? So I said, phone so light. This is so interesting.
Yvonne, you're actually breaking up some, and plus Alex is talking to me now. So let's take a quick break. We'll connect and reconnect from you in a second and hope for a better connection. And I'll take Alex back downstairs. You know what happened? The popsicle ran out.
Crisis.
Yeah, so we'll be right back to finish this sucker up, and maybe we'll even squeeze in a little bit that's not on smartphones, because we're getting a little like stuck in a rut here. Election smartphone. We'll be right back after this.
Okay.
There we go. After multitudinous delays and attempts, we have Yvonne again. I can actually hear you and hear you decently.
Good. So as I was saying, so I grabbed this Android phone. I try to turn it on, power button. It doesn't do anything. They said that they charged it overnight and nothing happened. I'm like, okay. So I go and I grab the instruction manual and I'm like, I said, gosh, this phone feels really light. So I go and I get the manual and I say, see that the first part of the instructions is open the back of the phone and insert the battery. Now, me having had an iPhone for such a long time, okay, I remember you don't have to do this, right? Okay, but you just take the phone and plug it in.
Because the battery's built in and you can't change it, which was also a big source of controversy when it first launched.
Right. Okay.
But now no one cares.
Nobody cares. So I go and I pop open the back of the phone and they had forgotten to insert the battery. Now.
Good job.
But it gets even better. The thing is that I said, okay, the person tells me, well, the phone didn't come with a charger or a battery. I'm like, no. I mean, what are you talking about? I mean, well, you have the box, right? Go grab the box. Oh, I threw it in the garbage. So they basically, I guess, that they have on one side of the package, they have the phone, and on the other side, they have the charger. And
they threw it out.
And they grabbed that and just threw it in the garbage.
So the moral of the story is...
Now, I to be fair, I have had certain products with packaging that had parts that were sort of hidden in the packaging. Yeah. And like, I would, like, put together the thing, or I would be starting to use it later, and I'd be like, what the fuck? Something's missing. But usually, I would say, I catch that before I've actually tossed the stuff.
Packaging has, or maybe it's in the garbage, but it hasn't made it, you know, the garbage collectors haven't.
I have had situations where I've actually gone through and looked through the packaging, and I'm like, what the fuck? There's nothing here. And then I find it, like, buried inside, like, a little wad of paper or something, you know?
I've done that. I mean, I gotta agree. But I haven't carted out the box that are garbage on most instances. I mean, it's been like, well, shit, I don't find this in the directions. Usually I'll keep the box like for a couple of weeks until I make sure everything's okay, and then I'll throw it out. Okay. That's been my standard rule. Okay.
I used to keep boxes for most shit forever, but now I'm like, it's gone.
But it usually still takes a little while
to get out of the house.
Forever. I keep it like for a couple of weeks. I'm like, you know, like my iMac when I got it, I kept the box for about a month, make sure that it didn't break down, I had to return or whatever.
I will say, actually, in the garage, I do have the boxes for all the iMacs in the house. And the reason is, although it's once every few years, I have found them very handy when I've had to move.
I can understand that. So anyway, story... Bottom line is, you know, if you go and you plug, number one rule, all phones come with a charger. I've not seen, because they start arguing with me.
Saying, now, by the way, don't apply this to other things. Like, for instance, if you get a printer, it does not come with the damn little cable that connects it to the computer.
Most instances, you're totally correct. The printer doesn't come with a USB cable. However, it will come with a power cord.
Usually, yeah. Yes. I'll give you that.
All right, a power cord will be included. I have yet to see a device that doesn't come with a fucking power cord included. Okay?
An apple?
A what?
An apple? The actual fruit? No power cord.
Device, not fruit. I don't think you could call an apple the physical one. I mean, a fruit, a device. You call your fruit devices.
How about apple slicer? That's a device.
Okay, an electronic device. Okay, all right. Let me be clear about that. Yeah, you're not going to get, you know, if a device requires power, there will be a cord
to help supply the power.
At least in the U.S., okay? I have heard that in some other countries that is not the case exactly, okay? Yeah. So, but at least in the United States, that's the case, okay? So
okay, do we have anything else to talk about? Like I said, we're having a diversity issue here. It's like election phones, maybe a little bit about tablets.
Maybe a little bit about tablets. I don't know.
Hey, let me ask you something completely different that we haven't talked about.
Okay.
What's the last book you read?
Fuck. Great question. I think that, to be honest with you, I think we talked about it. I think it was the Steve Jobs autobiography. This year, I have been extremely slow in getting any. I was reading a book. Ah, what the heck? I had it over there. I read halfway through a book. I can't remember the name of it. I got it right by my bed. I'm halfway through it, but I haven't picked it up in months. Okay.
Yeah.
The book is a story. It starts off as a story as the executive board of a company similar to Walmart is meeting at their headquarters somewhere.
Is this fiction or nonfiction?
It's a fiction book.
Okay, good.
And somebody places a bomb at the meeting of the board of directors. Okay, all right. And it goes off prematurely, but it kills a couple of people, and an investigation starts ensuing about who the people behind it are. You know, why there were reasons that people had a grudge against this large pseudo Walmart style company, you know, whether it was worker unions or employees or environmentalists or something. And that was the book. It was pretty interesting, but I've been slow in like picking up my pace on the book like right now. So
you can't even remember what it's called.
I think it's called Backfire. Okay. Okay. I don't want to misquote that. You know, so I was also reading the Andrew Carnegie autobiography,
Backfire by Catherine Coulter, an FBI thriller.
No, is it? No, I don't think it is. No, it's not Backfire. It's
Backfire, it's, a history of how American culture led us into Vietnam? No.
No.
Backfire by J.R. Tate, sequel to Through Smoke. Backfire by Neville Gillespie. This is apparently a fairly common fucking title.
Yeah, there was one also about a fuck about HP, you know, named Backfire, regarding Carly, you know, the story of Carly Fiorina. Fucking, let me see.
Anyway,
I think the I don't think it's something similar to
it'll turn out to be like Front Snow or something. Anyway, so I'll give you mine.
John Stanford. Hold on, I'll find the name of them.
Okay, while you figure it out, I'll give you my last couple of books. First of all, the book I'm currently reading, I just started. It's a biography of Theodore Roosevelt that was published in the 70s. The first published in the 70s. The Rise of Theodore Roosevelt by
Shockwave.
Okay.
Backfire, Shockwave. Close enough.
Anyway, what I'm reading right now is The Rise of Theodore Roosevelt by Edmund Morris. This is nonfiction. What was it originally? it's a revised version that was published in 2010, but the original version was in the 70s sometime, I guess. The last book I actually finished was a fiction book called Containment by Christian Cantrell. It's a science fiction book about a base on Venus and people, you know, they're just sort of it's a claustrophobic because you can't go outside kind of thing, and there's some weird stuff going on, and meanwhile they're trying to figure out how to make the the outside world more habitable, or how to survive more, because like they have only enough oxygen for the current population, but then there's a baby, and so like everybody's gonna die unless they figure out a way to survive on more oxygen. Anyway, it was actually a pretty cool book. I liked it. Before that, I alternate fiction and nonfiction is how I do it. The nonfiction I had before that was a book called The Four-Dimensional Manager that was handed out at work at some event like last year, or maybe not last year, early this year, whatever. Anyway, it was last year, last December. Anyway, it was crap. I hated it. It was only 255 pages, but it took me 30 days, which meant I read like eight or nine pages a day. And it was the kind of, you know, this is the kind of thing, you know, it's one of these, like, you take the little personality quiz, and depending on like what aspects of different personality and work styles people have, you relate with them differently in work situations, you know, and, you know, Yvonne, you and I talked about this a little bit when people were criticizing Obama for like not having meetings in person and stuff. But basically it's the whole thing is about like, yeah, they have this one particular version of a personality quiz that they like are promoting and have seminars based on that you can have people come out and give and stuff. But, you know, it's basically like, you know, figuring out whether you guys all know the type. It's the Myers-Briggs kind of thing, except this one is supposed to be situational instead. So it's not giving you their true personality type. You're thinking about how people react in certain situations, but it's the same kind of crap. And you know, I say crap, but it's very true. I mean, different people have different ways of reacting to things. And the fundamental premise of all of the books like this is if you're aware of these, you know, the fact that different people think about things differently and work things differently and change how you interact with them based on that, you can have a lot more success rather than just assuming everybody thinks like you do. And that's fundamentally true. And I don't have any disagreement with that. But whenever these books get into the specifics and say, this is personality type A, and this is how you deal with them, and blah, 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 get into all kinds of, I'm like, oh, okay, whatever. I get the point.
I think the biggest problem that you have so much out there, you mentioned this, is you have so many people that try to like get so upset because other people act or think different than they are. Okay, because they don't react to the same situations the way they do, and it's just I'm like It still shocks me to this day. The reaction is like, oh, those people want to do that way instead of this way. I'm like, well, and a lot of times it's not that the method is wrong, the one that they're approaching. It's just that it's different from the one that you want. Okay. Or the one that you're used to, or the one that you know. So I don't know.
Yeah. But. So anyway, those are the last two things I read. I used to, on a fairly regular basis, post little mini reviews of the books I'd read. But, you know, with this an election year and stuff, I'm so far behind. I haven't posted anything about, like, the last 20-something books I've read. So,
of course, Sam also used to post about these random spot trips that you used to do. But when was the last time you went to a random spot anyway, for God's sakes?
I'll tell you in just 1 second. But while I'm looking that up, news alert in the last 2 minutes, Arlen Specter died.
Holy shit, really?
Age 82. He died today.
Wow. Okay. Didn't expect that.
And,
okay.
And my website isn't answering. But it was like 2002 or something like that. It's been a long time.
Has it been 10 years? No. A little less than that.
Okay. Wait, is it answering? My website is answering now. Okay, hold on. for one.
Well, I could probably do a Google search. Let's see. Google's me. Random.
Okay, I got it. The last trip was to McKay, Idaho in Q3 of 2003.
Okay, so I was right. Off
not
a year.
Quite
okay.
10 years. Not quite 10 years. But it undoubtedly will be. The next trip is supposed to be, for the last 10 years, almost, the next trip is supposed to be been to the Yucatan Peninsula in Mexico, and that just, the logistics just ain't working out anytime soon, so.
But that's actually not that hard. I mean, if you think about it, I mean, you could take a straight shot. That's near Cancun. You could take a straight shot over there.
Yeah, I mean, the actual spot's like 150 miles south of Cancun. But yeah, you could take a flight into Cancun and then
rent a car.
And
you can rent a car easily.
I've done
that from Cancun.
But we got four people to take now instead of just one. That makes everything harder.
Well, I mean, let's face it. If you think about it from this logistics, okay, you've got Amy can drive.
Yes.
So you and
we're not going to drive to the Yucatan. That's just not happening.
No. When you get to Cancun on the plane, you can rent a car. You know, you get to the hotel. It's super easy. All the hotels have a rent a car thing. You just go to the hotel, take a cab. Then the day you decide to do the trip, you go downstairs, rent a car, boom, boom, boom. Off you go.
And then we're all killed by drug dealers. But anyway.
No.
I know.
Oh, God. Killed by drug dealers near Cancun. You're more liable to get into a traffic accident. You know, I will say this. The last time we went there, we rented a car that was look, I mean, this car was so small and underpowered. It had a three-cylinder, like, under 1 liter engine, okay? Uh-huh. And then I mean, I would be at, like, doing 55 miles an hour, and I would floor it. And, I mean, it really made no difference whatsoever. I mean, it just wouldn't move. We were, like, four adults in it, and we were driving down to some of the sites. And, I mean, this thing, I mean, with the accelerator all the way floored, would not really go much past 65 miles an hour. So I think that the one thing that I said about it though was I don't think it had a single airbag. So the crumple zones I think were really kind of like our body in this car. Okay, to be honest with you. Okay, yeah, I think if we got hit by something relatively big, yeah, the protection wasn't really there.
So anyway, for anybody who cares and nobody does, the specific location is actually just barely north of the Belize border, outside of the town of Chichobin.
I like it. Plus, Belize, hey, you know what? It's also Belize, everybody says, is beautiful to go to vacation.
The alternate way to get there, instead of going to Cancun, is go to the capital of Belize and then drive north from there.
Hey.
And then cross the border on not on foot, but, you know, in the car.
Okay. All right. Well, anyway.
Hey,
all right.
I think
so
that's
we
a
talked
show.
About books, random spots, phones, pads. The election, I think we're done.
I think we are. So thank you, everybody, for listening once again. We still have no volunteers for a Romney supporter. Yvonne, you and I are going to have to recruit someone.
Or, I don't know, one of us will play one as an adult.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to work. Anyway, thanks.
Is there like some kind of, I just thought about this, is there maybe some kind of online, like, Romney Ryan, like, robotic type of thing that we could feed it questions and see what it thinks about things?
I don't know. Let me tweet right now. Any Romney supporters out there,
like my idea,
who want to come on my podcast,
Romney bot.
Talk about why they like Romney?
Okay, here we go. Mem generator, Romney bot. Here we go. Okay. So what does this mean? What does this do?
Okay. Okay, anyway, I tweeted something. Not like okay, I expected an answer, but... Anyway, that's it. If you've got any questions, comments, etc., email me at abelsmay@abelsmay.com. Certainly, if you are a Romney guy, or even if you are not an Obama guy who's going to vote for Romney because he's not Obama,
right?
Toss me an email. Let's get you on. Or even if you don't want to come on, send me an email with some stuff and we'll read it. And you can be anonymous and all that kind of crap. Anyway, thanks for listening. Tune in again next week. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.